once more into the breach, dear friend.
Let's close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure on this Saturday, the 21st of May, 2016, which still sounds to me like a science fiction date, which means I'm really old.
Why do you think it was a science fiction date when they used the date that they knew was actually going to occur?
But still,
don't you think that would just be future date?
Nah, it just doesn't sound real to me. I mean, 19-something is real time. This, you know, 20-something is like a space odyssey. 2001, a space odyssey, you know, and the Robert Heinlein books that I read and the Isaac Asimov books that I read about all these amazing things as we ventured around the planets in the second decade of the 21st century. And here we are, and it's 2016.
See, that's the problem with mixing things that we know are going to happen with fiction and science fiction, is that you know that the year 2016 is going to occur.
Well, you don't know for sure.
Fictional stuff.
I mean, you suspect it's going to occur.
If it didn't occur, we wouldn't have known about it.
Exactly.
So you could just go ahead and lay your
bets. You could
assume.
You could assume that.
Yeah. I will bet you that 2017 will occur. It's not sure a sure thing, but I will bet you, because if I lose that bet, I don't have to pay.
Well, now I don't know. You got to take something into account here. We have a major election coming up. And
it's for city council, right?
No. We are big city council. And at least one of the candidates, after having read a lot of the things he says are going to happen and things he's going to do.
You have just, if you're trying to be vague, you've just removed one of three.
No, I'm just saying one of the candidates, and you'll be able to figure it out, but I'm trying to stay apolitical.
So now it's not one of two.
Well, okay, one of two. One of the candidates routinely says things. Of course, he takes them back later, but still, that's beside the point. He might decide that next year she'll be officially designated as, like, 1995 or something.
Okay, that could be either of the two male candidates.
Right. that's my point.
It's a wonderful, you know, wonderful election year.
Since basically in 1995 things were relatively cool.
Now, we could throw in the female candidate, too, and she might say that just to keep up with the two.
So far, she hasn't. She has not indicated that this would be her typical.
None of the three have indicated that next year will be 1995.
Right, but they could. I mean, it's within the realm of their universe, two of them.
This, listeners, is our attempt to be like a major news channel. Blather on about things that aren't real. And take your attention away from the things that are.
What I get a kick out of, well, I don't get a kick out of it, but I find ironic is I flipped over, my iPhone was telling me that the, you know, critical news is being reported on CBS, and I should immediately punch this little spot on my iPhone. I was going to say a button, but it's not really
a button. It's on your screen. It's just this button that really isn't a button.
It's a geophysical location of certain pixels on my screen. And they will interfere electronic. They will interface electronically with the tip of my finger through inductance. And then I can watch CBS News blather on. I actually watched
really
them for
important
about 15 minutes.
Blathering happening. Please tune in.
They were blathering about the Egyptian air flight as to whether what took it out of the air. When we don't have any.
We don't even know where it is yet.
Well, we do. We know about
it's
where
roughly
it is.
Roughly in the Mediterranean.
We found junk on the surface of the water. So.
But we're not even sure that's the right junk.
But it probably is the right junk.
It may be in the wrong trunk.
Well, the body parts. The bodies they have found a couple of bodies, and the bodies were people who were supposedly on the aircraft.
Okay.
So it's probably an indication.
So what the major news media does at this point is blather, speculate.
Uh-huh. And they're
very confidently.
Like, since he's never held public office, I guess it's just Mr. Trump. The position is that let's speculate endlessly on the terrorism aspect of something that we at present have no clue whether or not was terrorism.
Well, if a senator were to do that, a sitting senator.
Then we'd call him senator, her senator.
Right, and we would say this is speculation on the part of a senator. If a reality television star does it, then we would say that's good business.
If a presidential candidate does it, his polling goes up.
Right. Well, that's good business too, then.
Anyway, and for those of you who haven't been following the latest gory details about Egyptian Flight 804, apparently in the 3 minutes prior to it disappearing off radar,
there was smoke.
There were indications of, get this, smoke in the laboratory and in the instrument compartment underneath the avionics compartment under the pilot's location, which, by the way, could indicate they had an electronic fire.
Or it could indicate, this is my statement on it. This indicates that there was smoke.
Right.
There you go.
Got it.
Indicators, usually smoke is an indicator of fire. And there's an old adage that says where there's smoke, there's chipmunk. No, smoke, there's fire.
Right.
Where there's smoke, there's fire. Mm-hmm. So there may have been a fire on board the airplane. How the fire was set is pure speculation at this point.
However, one of the things that was pointed out by the Wall Street Journal this morning in an article, at least the writer of the article pointed out, there have been a number of aircraft accidents that were very much like this one that had nothing to do with terrorism and everything to do with a fire that started in an electronic system under the pilot's compartment. And they didn't get off emergency calls because their radios shorted out immediately. And like a battery caught on fire, there was another Airbus of a similar or the same model a number of years ago where the lithium battery.
Just like a laptop catching on fire, the airplane caught on fire.
In the instrument compartment under the pilot's area, under the cockpit, erupted into flame, shorted out all the radios, and the aircraft crashed.
Yeah.
So the fascinating thing, the thing that I was actually referring to was the fact that at least one of the presidential candidates has already declared it was a terrorist attack. And I think that tells us a lot.
Yeah, we don't know what it is.
About the process of the person who wants to be president.
Just as a side note, we have a presidential candidate who declared an attack that was a terrorist attack, that not to be a terrorist attack.
Really?
And has been blamed rather thoroughly for it. She was Secretary of State when it happened. But if we're going to put the blame on her for declaring it not a terrorist attack when it was a terrorist attack, but by her mistake, in my opinion, was she spoke...
She was briefed by the CIA.
Right, and the CIA said this is one of the major things that we're pursuing at the moment. So they were pursuing the whole idea that there was a video that led to the Benghazi attack. Not very many people at the time believed that was the case, but the CIA said this is one of the reasons. She went off and said this is the reason why it happened, and it wound up not being that reason. So she's been lambasted.
Actually, it was Ambassador Rice who said that, I think.
She said that.
Right.
No, I'm not Ambassador Rice. Hillary Clinton said, this is not a terrorist. This is a movie. She said it at a funeral.
Oh, okay. You're right.
It's a big deal.
Never mind.
Okay, so the Republicans are rightly upset that she would give a cause to something when she didn't know the cause, or she could have been lying about it. I don't know what her motivation would have been to lie, but she could have been. If we're going to hold her to that standard, we should hold Donald Trump to the same standard when he says it's a terrorist attack, when he doesn't know it's a terrorist attack. Mm. And it's not presidential on either case to say something adamantly with confidence when you don't have a clue.
Then we need congressional hearings on the subject.
I agree. We should have hearings on everything.
Right.
We should have hearings on whether or not we have hearings. How's that?
Makes sense to me. Anyways.
We have to do a disclosure, by the way. You haven't done that yet. Yes.
I have to do it?
Yes, we do have to do that.
The Personal Wealth Coach is not only a radio presentation of esteemable virtue. That's how I said that.
That's an opinion.
Esteemable. It could be high or low esteem.
It could be low esteem. It's just like saying somebody's lucky. You're not saying that's good luck.
Right. But it is also, or I should say, the name of a registered investment advisory firm in Salado, Texas, that gives investment advice and provides management on investment portfolios. And that's our disclosure, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's it. Well done.
Seems like there ought to be something
We're the
more.
Same people.
Close cover before striking.
But the people aren't the same as the organizations. And certainly, as people, we are not a radio program, because then we would be only around for a short period of time on Saturdays.
Yeah, but we would have a degree of immortality because we remain in existence as podcasts.
Do you want to talk about the economy, or should we talk about politics and whether or not we exist?
Is there a difference?
There's an existential political conversation going on right now, which seems to be all the rage.
We can talk about the rose.
The rose?
Yeah. U.S. existing home sales rose in April.
Ah!
And it rose by any other name.
It would smell as sweet.
Well, let's see. Probably the first thing we would talk about, if we were going to be completely legitimate about this.
No, then we shouldn't talk about it.
Is the mock market. Stock market.
Right.
The stock market. Let's see. What did it do this week?
I think it remained in New York all week.
Well, some of it did, because there's other elements of the stock
there's
market.
Some in Chicago and NASDAQ. The NASDAQ stock market isn't really anywhere.
And then there's the markets in Europe and Japan and China.
Well, you said it non-plural. You just said the stock market.
Right. Well, the market for stocks around the world. Anyway,
it's kind of like saying, when I went to the supermarket, you say, which one? Well, the supermarket.
Well, U.S. stocks finished mixed last week. I love that. It's a first sentence in Barron's The Trader. It said bookending prior midweek trading rises on Monday and Friday. What it boils down to is if you were following the Standard & Poor's 500 stock index as opposed to following the Dow Jones Industrial Average, you would have noted that the S&P 500 index did something that it hasn't done in about 3 weeks, which is it actually rose for the week.
So you did want to speak about the rose.
Yes.
Right.
And it rose a huge 0.28%.
Oh.
And if you multiply, if you annualize that, which is what the Commerce Department loves to do.
0.28%
annualized
by...
is a 3.3% rise for the year.
Oh. Wow, that's still not all that,
that which is
newsworthy.
Probably, well, I don't know. That's better than it did last year.
Yes. Friday was also the one-year anniversary of the top of the market.
Top of the market to you, Lud.
Top of the market to you as well.
Yes.
So May 20th of last year and May 20th of this year, we were down, 4% from the top?
We were actually 3.47% down from where we were at the top, at the high point of the market last year.
Okay.
But we're still up about 12% from the bottom point on February 11th.
And we're slightly up for the year.
Actually, we're up a little more than 12%. We're up about 15% from the bottom point in October.
And something interesting about all those time periods.
What?
They're arbitrary. They are...
They are arbitrary.
They are completely... senseless, except that we give them sense. They're senseless in that I don't know anybody that bought into the stock market on the 1st of January for a very good reason. The stock market was closed on the 1st of January. It was New Year's Day.
Right. But
so
but I didn't say anything about year-to-date. Now, year-to-date,
I said something about year-to-date. It's just slightly up year-to-date. 0.41%. Very, very, very slightly up year-to-date. All of the numbers that we use when we talk about indexes are arbitrary.
Indices.
Well, I'm going to say indexes. You can say indices if you want.
Tomato.
Potato.
Which, okay. All of this, by the way, makes as much sense as anything else, right?
Right. So this concept of an index... when we're quoting the stock market, and this is something I tell clients, and they've asked me to say this on the radio because it's...
Then say it.
And I will say it.
He's going to tell.
The idea of an index, when we talk about the S&P 500 or the Dow Jones Industrial Average, those are the two most used indexes, or as you prefer to say, indices. But I'm not going to say indices, except that I just said it twice. An index is an arbitrary number.
And if you have more than one index, it becomes an indice. It becomes indices. And if you have only one indice, it is an index.
Yes. So an index...
which is indicative.
When I say it's an arbitrary number, if you go back to the mid-1800s...
and wait a minute. Now you were talking about
Donald
Trump wasn't going to back up time.
Right.
And you're trying to get us back into the 1800s.
Well, we can do it by reading books or the internet if you prefer. So putting yourself back in time is something you can easily read about.
Oh, really?
You can even watch, but you can't really do it.
Yeah, but we were somewhere else at the time.
So if you go back and read about the mid-1800s, you will find that the Wall Street Journal existed back then. There were a lot of market-driven publications that existed back then that told you how your stock was performing and what it was trading for on the stock market. Very similarly to a tabloid saying what green beans were trading for on any given day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so why do we have an index? And the reason is that the editors of the Wall Street Journal said that it's really, really, really hard to have a front page headline talking about the hundreds and at some point thousands of stocks in the back part of the newspaper, because there's nothing that says what all of them did together. And at the time, they were not able to calculate the movements of all of those stocks as an average movement by the time the next day came along for publication. So they couldn't say, the whole stock market did this yesterday. They didn't have the capability. That would be a lot of people with abacuses sitting, and abacuses are like abahuggas.
I think it's abacai, but go ahead.
Abacuses are like abahugs.
Right,
so
okay.
So keep that.
You sure it's not?
It could be abacai.
Right, all right.
So you've got an abacus, and you're making all these calculations on the average of stock movements. And if you've got hundreds of stocks, you're not going to get it done in time. So they said, what we'll do is we'll just take the largest companies that exist today. Mm-hmm. We will find the largest companies in existence that we are tracking, and we will average their movements together and say, this is what happened in the market yesterday.
And since the number of fingers they had on both hands for most of their employees was 10.
Right.
Originally, it was 10 stocks.
Well, I think they started with 17.
17?
Yeah.
I thought they started with 10.
They started with 10, right, but not stocks. And I'll tell you that in a second.
Okay.
Okay, so 10 was a number. Keep that in. You have 10 fingers on your hand.
That's good.
With 10.
That's good. It's a digit.
Right. So what they did is they took these biggest companies that exist. And that index that they created, it's got more stocks in it now, but it's the Dow Jones Transportation Index. And the transportation index exists because the biggest companies at the time in the mid-1800s were...
railroads!
Wow, it's amazing. So they gathered these big companies and they said, we're going to average their movement and just put it all together. And
railroads moved a lot.
Yes, they did. So when they said the stock market moved today, they really meant it.
Right.
It really was because it was a transportation index. They didn't call it that. They just called it an index at the time.
As a matter of fact, the railroad company's value was based on the quantity and movement of their rolling stock.
Right. Absolutely. And a lot of that stock was cattle. So the rolling stock of cattle was common stock and livestock combined.
At the same time.
Right.
Right.
So in order to have an average movement, so we say they moved 1%. Okay, you can come out on the news and or in the you know with a headline says stock market gains 1% from what? What does it move 1% from? If you're just taking these stocks and throwing them together, what number do you hold to add 1% to it?
Mm-hmm.
So this is where the 10 digits come in. They arbitrarily started the index at the number 10. All the Dow Jones indexes started at the number 10. So the Dow Jones Industrial Index started at 10. It's an arbitrary number that they just said, yeah, we've got 10 fingers. Fine, 10.
But there were like 17 stocks.
So, yes. And now there's more of them in there. And I don't know exactly how many are in the Transportation Index now. There's 30 in the Industrial Index. And the Industrial Index replaced the Transportation Index as the best form of measurement for a long time because we had an industrial revolution and the big companies stopped being railroad companies. They were still kind of big, but they weren't as big as the new technological companies that came out like Woolworth and Sears and... wait, do those exist anymore? I think Sears is a holding company now.
Woolworth is gone.
It's gone. But these big companies came out as an industrial, both sales and manufacturing type, U.S. Steel, that sort of thing.
Don't forget the biggest one in there originally.
U.S. Leather.
Yes.
And that was an industrial company. So just for your knowledge, that's how they ran most of the industrial machinery, with leather straps. Rubber put them out of business. So
actually, steel sort of put them out of business.
It's a combination of rubber and steel, yeah. That, exactly. And by rubber, I don't mean the tree, because they had that already. I mean the petroleum product.
Earl put them out of business.
Right. So when we talk about the stock market moving, there's some arbitrary numbers in there, and then we quote time periods that don't have anything to do with you. A lot of people have talked to me about, you know, if they're on a fixed income, and they say, I'm feeling inflation right now, and you're saying there's no inflation. Well, the stock market indexes are a lot like that. You may be feeling inflation because you're dealing with a very small part of the economy, food, oil, energy, transportation. Those things move up and down a lot more than the entire economy. They move up and down a lot more than the house market or the car market or the electronics market. And the same is true in the stock market. When we have an index, it's an arbitrary group of companies, usually based on size. And that's not usually how people choose their portfolio. So when we're quoting indexes, it's really to give an average of average of averages, and it may not have anything to do with you at all. And then we quote it in time periods that certainly, unless we get really, really lucky, you didn't buy your portfolio a year ago or year to date or 10 years ago. So the numbers that we quote, everybody knows that. They don't have to do with your own stuff. But we really like to look at these headlines and say the stock market crashed, when you might be able to look at your portfolio and not see it crash, because it wasn't the whole stock market.
Of course, on the other hand, the feedback is there and it's very real. When an index declines, even if the stock you hold is not in the index, it probably will decline as well without regard to the quality of the company, simply because people look at the index and use that to bias their purchases or sales. Yeah,
there's a behavior aspect there, and that you may have a great company, but if the news media comes out with a headline that says the market crashes, then you or other people like you might decide to sell a stock that's not even in the index, and that causes the price to go down on that stock, unless there's just a lot of people waiting to buy it. So from the behavior aspect, it may have been a bad thing for the news media to create indexes that the economists that you hear or anyone else that's talking about the index can tell you on any given day if it's up or down, because that creates instability. It causes people to say, hey, the index is going up, I'm going to buy more of something that's not even in the index. It's very similar to spending during the real estate bubble in 2006. We had this massive spending. Consumer spending was going crazy because people were saying, well, we have so much value in our house. But wait, you're not spending your house. You cannot spend your house at HEB.
Which?
You cannot spend your house at Woolworths. Well, you couldn't spend it at Woolworths because Woolworths didn't exist.
But you could spend your house back in the early 2000s. What you do is you take out an equity loan.
That's not really spending your house.
Yeah, but it's close enough for government work.
Because what you're doing there is you're taking a debt that allows somebody else to come and take your house if you haven't repaid them.
But the point is, you can take value. You could take value from your house, use it as collateral on a loan, and thereby receive money in return for it, and go spend it. And people were doing that.
Yes, they were. They were.
And so they were effectively spending their house.
And that is kind of an indicator of a problem in the market. If somebody's taking their car and spending it while still driving it,
wait a minute.
You got to have the money coming back somewhere.
The question is, can you spend your house and live in it too?
Yes, you can. And unfortunately, people do that. If you want to keep your house, you can't do that.
Well, actually, you can.
If you're willing, well, what I'm saying is, if long term, if you want to keep your house, doing this as a long term practice, you're not going to keep your house.
So if somebody takes a reverse mortgage in retirement, then they can keep their house and spend it too. But now their kids can't get the house.
They don't really keep their house because they don't get to pass it on. It's kind of like you don't get to keep your Social Security when you die.
But you don't get to keep anything when you die.
Your depending on what religion you follow.
I got you.
Egyptians would argue with my argument
here, and this is a point, and it is one of the reasons that we have to have new types of regulation, and we've developed those, is that previously, in, historically, you're correct. If you had a lot of value in your house, you couldn't spend it.
Right.
Particularly in Texas.
Yes.
But
because Texas was afraid of bankruptcy.
Banks came up with this innovative way that you could extract value from your house.
Spend it.
And spend it.
And also make the bank a profit.
Yes.
If you paid it back.
Right.
That's a big if. That's kind of a big if.
And of course, the bank made the assumption they could always take your house away from you and sell it and make
at
it
a profit.
Right.
And what they found during the Great Recession is that they could take your house away, but they couldn't sell it at a profit. Because nobody was selling houses at a profit at the time.
So one of the reasons, as we develop going forward in our society and in our economy, we have old traditional views of investment and money and value. And as the financial world innovates, which it does and has been doing and always will do probably, a lot of times the old wisdom ceases to be valid. And we don't have any new wisdom to replace it with, so we get kind of out of control,
right.
Which is, of course, is why people were buying houses. First off, they were buying them with no down payment, and then they, knowing they couldn't make the payments, but they assumed that the value of the house would always go up. By the way, that was a universal assumption. The value of the house will always go up, therefore they can always refinance the house later on and get more money out of the house to use to make the payments on the house that they couldn't afford to make before.
Right. All they have to do is get a loan from the house to pay for the house loan that they have now.
Should be fine. That they can't afford.
Right. There's some chain of logic issue there. There's a problem somewhere along the chain.
There's a guy named Madoff who had exactly the same logic. And unfortunately, he didn't do it first. There's a guy named Ponzi who did it first.
Right.
Well, actually, he didn't do it first, but he did it first that made headlines.
Yes. Well, and
so
his
he got it named after him.
His name lives on.
Yes, he's immortal.
He is immortal. In infamy, but it is immortal.
And one of the issues about Ponzi, and probably to some degree Madoff, they ultimately came to believe that their scheme, where they could create money out of nothing, worked.
Yeah.
And
most people that do these schemes actually believe in them while they're doing them.
And you'll have to pardon me, I don't remember the name of the current dictatorial president of Venezuela. But Chavez was the guy he replaced, and he's basically a non-entity anyway.
He's the dictator now. So.
Right. He has just assumed disruptive rule.
Right.
He said there's a disruption. No kidding. The whole concept in the rule of that country was, if I have enough political power, I can create value from nothing. And so they're
Maduro.
Maduro, yes.
And I've totally mangled the Spanish pronunciation, but that's okay because we're in Texas.
Right. Tejas. The point is that no matter what his dictatorial powers, and over the years, people have firmly believed, including the various rulers of Greece, that if you have sufficient power, you can create value from nothing. You can just demand that it appear, and it appears. And it hasn't worked real well in Venezuela, and everything's kind of falling apart, and there's riots in the streets, and that's one of those little interesting things that's keeping the stock market from being irrationally exuberant. Instead, it's sort of irrationally depressed. But we have neither announced the telephone number.
Why would we do that? People would call in.
Yeah. If you'd like to call in and join with this discussion or ask us any question about finance or economics, not about sports.
Yes. Yeah, well, although we can talk about the economics of sports, we will not be able to tell you whether or not.
Right. Our dismal ignorance about sports is legendary. Anyway, the telephone number in here.
I know a lot about the Cardinals.
They
mate for life. They're red in color when male, and they have orange beaks as a female, but that's my extent of knowledge about that sports team. Yeah.
Okay. Well, the Cardinals that I'm familiar with that don't have wings do not mate for life, necessarily.
Oh, they just have red suits on.
Right. They have red flag. No feathers, as far as I can tell. One of them does.
Right.
But he doesn't actually get out and be a cardinal. He's just the...
He has a feather?
He has lots of feathers.
Okay.
And he dances up and down the sideline.
Ah.
Or she. You can't tell.
But has wings.
Right. But doesn't fly.
Okay. So the phone number is to include yourself in this insanity.
The area code is 254, and the local number is 947. Nope. 773-1400. So 254-773-1400. And speaking of the economy, we need to do some commercials and maybe get our minds back together where I know where I am and what I'm doing. Not that that will necessarily work, but we'll be back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach on this Saturday, May 21st. And you can welcome to give us a call at 773-1400. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and Jake McClure. And the telephone number in here remains, area code 254-773-1400.
Right.
And it's been 3 weeks since we were in here.
Yeah.
Or 3 weeks missing, so 4 weeks since we were in here.
It is?
Yeah.
We missed 3 weeks, but four weeks went by.
Yes.
It is 1995.
No.
No. Okay, it's 2016. Anyway, if today is May 21st, 2016, where you are, you're welcome to give us a call and ask us a question or make a comment or something. If anyone's listening. If you're not listening, then...
I'm not listening.
I wouldn't...
So you're in at least company. Hey. I wouldn't say good company, because I'm not listening either.
Speaking about the economy, first off, there's a lot of positives out there. The United States... is clearly growing, and admittedly, the GDP isn't growing very fast by historical standards. It's growing about 2-2.5% a year. But when you consider how big it is, that's still a lot of growth. The real growth in China, by the way, which is the fastest growing large economy in the world, is probably 4.5-5%.
Mm-hmm.
So when you consider that they're, quote, a developing market, end quote, country, and we are a mature market country, we're actually doing very well, and the European Union reported that they are indeed growing 0.5% a year.
That's a good number for them, because that's better than the negative numbers they've been saying.
Unfortunately, for the people who live there, if you're in the southern half of the Eurozone, your economies are still shrinking and employment is still double digits, higher than ours was at the worst point. Now, if you live in Northern Europe, where it gets really, really cold in the wintertime, although not as cold as it used to get, the employment rates are similar to the United States, where there's very, very, very low unemployment. Most people are employed. Most people are relatively well off. And their economies are growing, and it's really an interesting conundrum. Here in the United States, as a nation, we are doing quite well. Interestingly enough, we don't follow the north-south paradigm. For instance, Texas is one of the faster-growing states in the United States economically, population-wise. By the way, did you hear the fastest? Did you hear what the town was with the fastest-growing population?
No, I didn't.
In 2015?
I didn't.
Georgetown, Texas.
Oh.
In the whole nation, the fastest percentage growth in population of what's called a major metropolitan area, 50,000 or more, was Georgetown, Texas. And, I mean, Round Rock was right behind it, and five of the top 10 were all in Texas. Something there, and I...
Yeah, there's something there.
There's something economically, like the fact we don't have a state income tax. But... this is the key interesting, the key thing to me. Yes, we have growth in the economy in the United States, but there's still a lot of negatives floating around out there in the big wide world. And there's a lot of fear going on.
There's some negatives in the United States as well. There's a lot more positive than there are negative.
Okay, list some of the... I mean, I agree with you, but list some of the negatives.
Okay. Wage growth is a good positive. Okay, we've got wage growth 11 of
for
the
some
12...
people.
11 of the 12 districts for the Federal Reserve showed wage growth. And as a, on average, we're back up to where we were in 2009.
Right.
So the wage growth has increased. The employment has increased.
Right.
But if you live in Georgia, Georgia, the United States, not Georgia, Eastern Europe.
Well,
Georgia,
you get,
Eastern
you,
Europe
you,
is a little
you
bit
have
worse.
You have your choice. You have your choice. Yeah.
So you were talking about southern
Georgia.
Half of European Union. But
right.
The Atlanta Bank for the Federal Reserve is reporting that wage growth in their district is still not up.
Right.
Overall, is a 3.4% increase in wages over a year ago, which is great. That's fantastic. That's one of those things that we've been waiting for and saying this is going to happen. And when it actually happens, we're going, oh, we knew that was going to happen, but it's still nice to be told it happened.
But the market's behaving, though, is behaving as if it isn't happening.
Right. Well, there's a lot of little things like that that when you look at – this is something I wanted to talk about anyway.
That's fine. I'm waiting on one of these negatives now.
Okay. Consumer expectations for business conditions.
Right. On the leading economic indicators, every single one of them was up except one, which
right.
is consumer expectations.
Right. There are 10 of them, and one of them was down. There are 12 Federal Reserve districts, and one of them, the wage growth wasn't there.
So obviously
so
we're about to have a recession.
We have some negatives, and those negatives get the headlines.
Hmm.
But if you've got 9 out of 10 indicators saying things are looking good for the future and one of them is negative, well, that's what the media is going to cover.
Right, except that particular group of people who have negative expectations.
Right.
Just in the last quarter and in the last month, hauled out their credit cards.
And started spending.
And started spending money. There's card debt is like up to $961 billion. Which is good, by the way.
That indicator, the consumer expectations.
Mm-hmm.
It's consumer expectations for business conditions, not consumer expectations for their own spending or consumer expectations for their own life.
So where do they think their income comes from?
That's a good question.
They all raise.
What do we think is going to happen in the future? I don't know. It's probably pretty bad. I just got a raise. You know, I don't know what's going on.
Well, it could be they all work for the government and don't care about. You know.
People in the government are not getting raises right now.
Well, little ones.
No.
Cost of living.
The cost of living for the last 2 years, they haven't had a raise for that.
They had a little one.
Okay.
The reason I say that is their raises are indexed to the same index that Social Security is to. And we got a little bitty raise in Social Security. Speaking as a Social Security recipient, I got a little bitty raise.
That's because you're old.
Right. But they're all indexed together. They didn't get much of a raise.
Okay.
They got a tiny one.
Government payrolls. Monthly.
Right.
This is great.
Now, the payrolls are different because you
can. This is in millions.
Right. But you can lay people off and lower the payrolls, but the people who are still there still got a raise.
Right. So, monthly, the government payrolls is down $11 billion.
Right.
Because they've laid people off or they haven't hired people to replace retirees.
Right.
So when I'm looking down this huge list that I look at regularly of what's going on, wages in high-skilled area, part-time employment, full-time employment, all that good stuff, there's a negative on here. And I'm scrolling down and looking for negatives, and there's a negative. Government payrolls are down by $11 billion in a month.
Yes.
But non-farm payrolls are up $171 billion.
Yes. Well, I don't know what they have against the farm.
Well, they just don't want to be on the farm for this payroll.
Oh, well, they always say non-farm payrolls, and I always wonder why they leave.
There aren't that many.
There's not that many people out there on the farm anymore.
No,
at some point,
like right around 1% of the population is.
And most farms.
Less than that now.
Farms are basically industrial operations now. So I think probably they ought to put
just
the farm
payrolls.
Workers back in there and just
say
payrolls.
Payrolls.
And by the way, I do know the reason they say non-farm.
I do too.
Because of the seasonal worker issue in farms.
If you come in to work for a farm, you're going to have a big area of time that you work and a big area of time that you don't work.
In some cases.
In some cases.
In California.
Unless you're, and that's going to go away, by the way.
Yes, because the automated pickers are picking.
Yes. The drone workers are happening. This is not science fiction anymore. This is reality. There are robots going through and selectively targeting weeds for herbicide. So it's using a lot less herbicide. They're selectively choosing fruits. They're counting fruits. They're doing all kinds of things that people used to do.
When it comes to actually removing the fruit from the tree or the plant without damaging the tree or the plant, humans still hold the edge.
For a while. Not in almonds.
Probably for quite a while.
Not in peaches. Not in plums.
Oh, they've got robots picking peaches now?
There are still people involved. They're not autonomous yet. But just like the tractor, what they do is they have this machine that reaches up with the crane and grabs a branch, and it's got padding. And it grabs the branch along the length of the branch, not at one place, and shakes it really hard. And it's got a net underneath it, and it catches it all. Now, a human still has to hit a switch at that point to cause the fruit to get put on a conveyor belt and go in. But that switch is something that a robot's going to be doing soon.
Well,
there's still an edge. And
They aren't picking tomatoes yet, though.
Just
or
like
strawberries.
John Henry was a steel-driving man. The peach picker may be able to peach pick faster than the robots can, but not for long.
So
we're going to make songs out of this.
We could have a new insult. You semi-autonomous peach picker.
Oh! That would be a good insult at any time, I think.
What we're referring to is the fact that government continues to shrink, and private businesses continue to grow because of the political party in the White House, and I realize that you think I've just lost my mind, but in fact, if you look back through history, you discover that in the last 60 years, this is really goofy, but it's true. You can look at the numbers. The number of government employees tend to shrink under Democrats and grow under Republicans.
And part of that has to do with defense spending.
And I'm not talking about soldiers, not counting soldiers.
Okay. So
just civilian employees.
You are correct. During George W. Bush's time period in office, there were a lot of civilian contract workers that were hired.
Not even counting civilian contractor, actual civil employees.
So civil employees, and this is true,
tend to grow under Democrats.
Tend to shrink under Republicans.
And they shrink. In other words, as strange as this sounds, when there's a Democratic, now it could be this purely coincidental, but it's been a very consistent coincidence for a really long time that, for instance, under Bill Clinton, the number of federal employees, I'm talking about civil service employees, shrunk substantially under George W. Bush. You got a whole new department under George W.
Right, and part of that has to be external influences.
Mm-hmm. And so under Ronald Reagan, it grew.
It grew, but he decided to actively fight the Cold War instead of passively exist. So you have to listen to what we're saying and not say that Republicans are all about bigger government.
They're not. It's just they wind up with bigger government because there's things they want to do that cause
the
government to
get
bigger.
Look around and they say, we've got a Cold War to fight and win. Mm-hmm. And Ronald Reagan doing that led to George H.W. Bush actually did have a shrinking of government during his time period in office. It wasn't as big as the shrinking that took place under Bill Clinton.
Got to look at that.
But it happened. So once we won the Cold War, we stopped. So there are some other influences. But if we look at history, we see repeatedly Republicans growing government and Democrats shrinking government, Republicans repealing free trade and Democrats passing free trade, which doesn't make sense because it's the opposite of both platforms. But for some reason, that's how politics works. I don't understand it.
Let's talk about housing just a second since we're closing in on the end of the hour and we haven't got any calls. That's probably one of, if not the biggest driver in the economy. Existing home sales rose by about 6.1% annually as of the end of April. And that's significant because when the final numbers are in, and they're not in yet, we're still working off estimates, it very well may be an all-time, well, not all-time record, but it indicates it's the automobile sales, on the other hand, which rose about 4%, may be an all-time record. So what we've got at the end of April is in the two probably largest elements in the United States economy, automobiles and houses, we are seeing significant growth. Now, what we're not seeing is huge growth in the building of new houses yet. We're certainly nowhere up to where we were in the mid-2000s. And But the point is, if you're looking down the road and saying, are we about to go into a recession or are things likely to get better? The price of houses went up 6 point. The price of existing houses, sale price of existing houses, by the way, the median is now $263,000. Whoa. That's the average. Actually,
that's
median.
The median. Yeah.
But for common vernacular, we don't go around saying median. We say average.
Even though that's not what median means.
But it's close.
Sort of. Sometimes.
Right. In this particular case, it's really close.
If you consider that there are a lot of houses that go for millions of dollars.
Actually, the average price is higher, but let's just start. Right. Okay, we're talking the median price of a new house of an existing house in the United States that was sold in April was $263,000, which to my old mind seems like a heck of a lot of money for a median house. But that's just where it is. And then, by the way, those are up 6.3%. Why is that important? First off, people, when they buy houses, when they spend $250,000 buying a house, even though they're going to pay it off over 30 years, they tend to buy a bunch of stuff to go in the house, which is good for the economy.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, as the price of housing rises that fast over a period of time, existing housing, it provides a huge incentive to build new houses. So we probably, in the next couple of years, will see a rather significant acceleration in new house construction. New house construction has a multiplier in the economy of somewhere between 12 and 16. So every dollar that's spent building a new house generates between $12 and $16 in the GDP in the economy. So this is very optimistic about the future. The fact that the leading economic indicators, 11 of 12 of them, are positive right now indicates the chances of a recession in the next 6 months to a year are effectively zero.
Yes.
Barring, of course, something like an earthquake in California or a nuclear war. So what we're looking at is a very healthy economy in the United States with a lot of very depressed people not doing much investing.
Right. There's on the labor front, let me throw in some other numbers here. I realize we only have a couple of minutes. But people talk about the labor force participation rate, and they talk about the real unemployment rate. Our unemployment rate is at 5%. And the real unemployment rate, if you want to count, and there's a lot of people that say that unemployment rate's not right because what about the people that just stopped looking for work? Well, there's a way to calculate that. Basically, how you calculate it is you say how many people are above the age of 16 and don't have jobs.
And below full retirement age.
Well, no, that's not part of the calculation.
Like 67.
No, that's not part of the calculation. That's part of some people's calculation of it. But it isn't because some people are working longer.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the capability of working beyond full retirement age. So the number that they're using, depending on who's doing it, is in the mid-70s or even into 80. And what that means is that you have this huge population. We're at 63% right now of that group of people are working. When you consider that there are stay-at-home moms, when you consider that there are people in school, people in the military are not part of this calculation. If you're in a prison, you're not part of the calculation. They pull it out as if it's not part of the population at all. But basically what that means is that at the very top, we had about 66.2% of the labor force working. And now we're at 63. And since then, the baby boomers have been retiring. So the real unemployment is pretty close to that 5%, and we're about out of time.
And you have been listening to the Personal Wealth Coach Hour. We'll be this hour. We will be back next hour, Lord willing. And if you'd like to contact us off the air, we have a local telephone number where we have a business voicemail during the weekend. Real live people will answer the phone during the week, and it's 947-1111.
Or you can reach that toll free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can visit our webpage, tpwc.com, as in thepersonalwealthcoach.com. You can send us email directly at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. Until next hour, this has been The Personal Wealth.
Your Fox News radio station in Central Texas. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM. Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.